In April, a wunderkind turned 75. Andre Previn, born in Berlin and raised in California, was scoring Hollywood movies when he was just in high school. Among his subsequent credits, the film scores for Porgy and Bess and My Fair Lady and Gigi. Andre Previn also played jazz piano, and then he returned to his roots as a classical conductor and composer. Mr. Previn was recently in Washington, where his opera, A Streetcar Named Desire, is being performed. The opera, which is based on Tennessee Williams' play, premiered in San Francisco in 1998 with Renee Fleming singing the role of Blanche DuBois, as she does on this recording. Andre Previn inhabits that galaxy of classical performers whose appearances are booked years in advance. I asked him when he was scheduled to be in Washington, D.C. in May 2004.
I think at birth, to tell you the truth, because I no longer can remember when it wasn't like this. And I used to query it all the time. I used to say, why is this the only business in the world where you have to book yourself, or where you are booked, 3, 4, 5 years in advance, especially with operas? And no one's ever given me a really logical answer. I think it's just grown, because I do remember that it used to be, it always was that you were booked a year in advance or 2 years, but now it's really getting out of hand. And I have, sometimes I have these surreal conversations with my management where they say, you know, do you really want to go to Amsterdam and then to Paris during March? And I say, March what? Well, 2008. And I said, what are you putting me on? I said, I don't even know where I'm going to be next Wednesday. So I don't know what that is, but there's probably an economic reason.
How deep into the future are you booked right now? Do you know?
Yes. For instance, this opera, I have a date in Vienna in 2007. So, you know, it doesn't get much beyond that.
3 years in advance is that's a lot of life accounted for.
Maybe
right
so,
there.
But I mean, if I were a genuine success, I'd say 2010.
How big a project has the opera been generally for you? How important to you is it?
Oh, it's important for probably extra musical reasons, and that is that it's just anything that's that many pages and that much moving of the pencil takes on an importance that it might not have on its own merit. I think any project of size to a composer has two lives. One is based on how good is it, and the other is based on how much work was it. And one tends to be short-sighted and think, well, I worked on it for so long, it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very likely that you can work on something for years and it's lousy.
The idea of writing an opera, of starting at one point and then waiting for its conclusion is just a different cycle of work and gratification.
Yes, and it, of course, it's a different kind of necessity of inspiration. You know, I mean, you have to work you have to use your inspiration on the spur of the moment. And that's difficult for a composer to do. I wrote a violin concerto for my wife, Franz Zofimo, to last year, and I wrote that in considerable haste because I really wanted to write it and get it done. So I wrote that in about 3 months, and it's a huge piece. So, you know, not every piece takes months or years, but it does have to be planned. It can't. I think spontaneous composing is difficult to do as long as you have to write it down.
After conceiving of the opera, writing the first act, getting René Fleming on board, completing it, going into production in San Francisco, how important is a review to you after it opens? What does it do to you when you read the critics?
Well, I prepared myself by rereading the reviews, for instance, of the opening of Carmen.
Mm-hmm. It was a disaster, Carmen.
Oh,
yeah.
Total.
A flop.
Yes. And so on and so forth, out of Pelléas. So I wasn't prepared for a great review. And what's curious to me is, since the opera was premiered in San Francisco, is the San Francisco papers disliked it. Mm-hmm. All the European correspondents loved it. Mm-hmm. But it isn't really important. You know, what was important to me is that I actually liked some of it myself very much, and some of it I wanted to fix. And I think that criticism, when it can help shape your life or career, is very important. Therefore, a young person starting out has to be careful of reviews. But I think when you get to do it as many years as I have, you begin to relegate it to its correct perspective.
You said some of it I liked and some of it I wanted to fix. Do you actually go and fix, or do you say, it's there, that's it, it's done, some people really like it, it's fine, it's being performed, and let it be?
If there is a moment which is genuinely impractical, mm-hmm. I'll fix it. Other than that, I tend to say, well, next time, don't do that.
Mm-hmm. When you approach Tennessee Williams' text and you make this into an opera, what was the most daunting challenge, knowing that the memory of Marlon Brando is somehow going to be haunting that opera hall as
yes,
we watch Streetcar?
You're absolutely 100% correct, but the play is not about Stanley. Mm-hmm. The play is exclusively about Blanche.
I want to take you back 45 years for a moment to when I hear the name André Previn in my
45 years?
Yeah, 1959. And there's a song that's very popular then called Like Young.
Oh, I have to tell you, I don't have as good a memory of it as evidently you do. I was making records in those days, and it was just another record, you know. The only thing I can tell you about it that I think is funny is the word "like" in those days was appended to everything by the young people. And you know, it was like wonderful, or it was like fast, or whatever. And I thought, okay, like young. And I was friends with Ira Gershwin, And he heard it, and he said, you know, you surprise me, because you seem a very literate man. Don't you know it should be as young? And I thought, oh, Ira, it's wonderful. That's my...
So you're either failing at being cool or being misunderstood in the yes. process at that point. You're doing a lot of jazz piano at that time?
Yeah,
still?
I was. No, I don't do it anymore. I play every once in a while. Mm-hmm. I do maybe 2-3 jazz concerts a year at the most. I make a record every 2 years. I enjoy it a lot, and I listen to it quite a bit, and so does Anna Sophie.
As someone who has bridged these worlds of popular and jazz music and symphonic and operatic music, are they any closer together or any farther apart than they were, say, 50 years ago in Hollywood, or is it pretty much the same story?
No, Hollywood is not a good example anyway, because it's Mars to begin with. See, every once in a while, every decade, somebody says those two aspects of musical life have to get together. Mm-hmm. And it really never works, not to my thinking. I mean, the first record I heard was the Modern Jazz Quartet with a string orchestra. And it seemed to me that somebody was unhappy all the time. I don't see that they need each other's help so much. I think that a good jazz player is happy with other good jazz players, and the same thing. I heard a piece by Ornette Coleman, a very avant-garde saxophone player, with a string quartet. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand a single bar of it. I didn't understand the point of it. So I always think that the two disciplines are so good by themselves, I don't see why they have to be forced together.
Well, Andre Previn, thank you very much for talking with us
today. Thank you.
Andre Previn's Streetcar Named Desire is currently being performed by the Washington National Opera. Here's a bit of Previn on the podium conducting the London Symphony Orchestra and Gil Shaham in Korngold's Violin Concerto.